Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, is it possible to game the lotto? A new documentary tells the story of a group who attempted to do just that in 1992. Ross Whittaker is the director of Beat the Lotto, which hits cinemas tomorrow, I believe. Ross, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean. How are you getting on?
Not too bad. Now, this was just because, and people need to kind of imagine, this was 1992. There was no mobile phones. There was no internet, really, with which to organise these things. So this was a manual, a completely manual attempt.
Yeah, well, what they wanted to do was to, I suppose, cover every single combination that there was, which was about 2 million combinations. And then they had to fill each of those out by pen.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, I think they estimate about 11 million strokes of a pen just to make this happen. So it took a year to fill out all the slips. And then, of course, they had to try and buy all the tickets within a 3-day period. Everything was very analog.
Yeah. Now, and the guy behind all this, Stefan Kleinsiewicz, is that how you pronounce it?
Klinsiewicz, I believe.
Klinsiewicz. Okay, fair enough. Sorry, my Polish lessons, I've fallen behind in them. Bit of a genius.
Yeah, I mean, Stefan has a brilliant maths brain, you know, and he could see opportunities maybe where others didn't. And it was a combination of, I suppose, like, actually, I remember in school, the maths teacher did this problem and he said, you know, if you buy every single ticket, then you will be guaranteed a win, but not if you have to share it. But what happened on that particular weekend was that there was a special offer for match fours. And that meant that you sort of couldn't lose if you bought all the combinations. And Stefan recognized that. Planned it for a year in the hope that it would happen. And then when the moment came, as he said himself, they pushed the button.
Yeah. Now, he had investors. How many investors did he have and how much money did they invest?
Well, one of the funny things about making this documentary is that sometimes there were you ask a question and the guys in the syndicate give you slightly different answers. But I understand there was about 20 members of the core syndicate. And then, of course, each of those might have had a number of people that they were representing. So I'd say there was probably like 100 people with various levels of money in on this, which was £970,000 at the time, which, you know, you might remember. And I remember in the 90s was a crazy amount of money, you know, but they managed to get it all together. And of course, you wouldn't leave that kind of money lying around. So they had to, you know, they had to, I suppose, decide they were doing it and bring the money to the table very quickly because you have 3 days. There's a draw on Wednesday and Saturday.
Okay, so we didn't have the money in advance. It was like, we're pulling the trigger in 3 days' time.
Yeah,
therefore,
get
the money. And then in terms of buying the tickets, and obviously you don't want to go into one shop and say, give me, you know, 700 grand's worth of lottery tickets, please. That might look suspicious.
Yeah.
And how did they spread it around?
Well, that was the idea, was to spread it around so you wouldn't alert the lottery as to what was going on. But there was maybe some people didn't spread it around as much as they were supposed to at the time. And also, we had an incredibly sophisticated lottery. We had the most advanced one in Europe. And it was obviously, you know, seen as a tremendously positive entity in our society. But the clever people at the lottery recognised quite quickly that there was something amiss here. You know, shops that would take usually small amounts of money were suddenly generating tens of thousands. And, you know, they woke up to it and they sort of got involved then at that stage. And that's where the twists and turns begin.
Yeah. Now, but what they were doing wasn't illegal.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, again, if you know, for people over a certain age, they'll remember when the lottery was launched and it was such a positive thing. It had a brilliant spokespeople and the whole thing was just absolutely fantastic. And people had hopes and dreams all of a sudden because it was, you know, we hate to bore people with the details, but it wasn't a very happy time in Irish history and society. So when they did start the what I call a heist, you know, when the heist began, I suppose there was a feeling that this wasn't in the spirit of a game that had generally, you know, been sprinkling gold dust around the country for the last few years. And that's why I suppose they felt like, well, we don't want to undermine the average person's experience of this. So, we can't just let them run roughshod over this amazing game that we've created.
Yeah. Now, but Stefan kind of had form. That's probably not a very appropriate way of putting it, but he had worked on figuring out ways to win the lottery before. Hadn't he written a book about it? Even?
Yeah, well, you know, at that time and even to this day, it became quite commonplace, I suppose, because everyone was obsessed with the lottery. And I remember running into my parents' house, you know, every Wednesday and Saturday evening to see had we won or not. But, you know, a lot of workplaces would have had syndicates, like little syndicates and stuff like that. And, you know, it wasn't obvious to people as to how do you even put together a syndicate or how do you spread your money around in a kind of useful way. So Stefan and I created this book essentially to help people see ways of reducing the odds depending on how much money they put in. So he wasn't guaranteeing that people were going to win the lottery, even though the book was called How to Win the Lottery. It was really about, you know, systems that that could help you reduce the odds. And that was sort of the background to it. Yeah, I mean, for some reason, Stefan really was attracted to the lottery as an interesting game that sort of tweaked his imagination, and it had been sort of part of his story for the previous few years.
Yeah, but I kind of get the impression from reading about this that for Stefan, it was more like a mathematical problem he wanted to solve rather than he cared that much about the money.
Well, mathematical, yes, absolutely. And, you know, he saw the opportunity, as I said, but it also, I think, like, the logistical element of it was what really amazes me, because they spent a year, and his son Stefan and other people, you know, neighbors and friends and so on, I'm sure were involved as well. They had to fill in all those forms. So the logistics of doing that, to me, is the truly incredible aspect of it. And the logistics of going on a Wednesday night, we have to go and buy all these by Saturday night. Like, that's insane, you know, but they planned it all. And, well, we won't say how it ends, but they had a good run at it.
The reaction to it, though, among the Irish public was it kind of 50-50, and it was a large amount of fair play to them kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to estimate how if it was 50-50 or 60-40 or what. But, like, you know, I think the thing
Stefan would probably tell you.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I suppose, like, there weren't a lot of institutions in Irish society, and, like, we were starting to see the fall of the Catholic Church, and, you know, Charlie Hoy resigned that year. So there was a lot of negatives in society, but the lottery wasn't that. It was like uniquely positive entity. And so when people saw, you know, I think Irish people, the psyche at the time probably was like they'd be generally in favour of people having a go and beating the system. But when it came to the lottery, people didn't feel as strongly about it, you know, or they felt like this was something you shouldn't be trying to undermine. So, like, when I started looking at the archive material, I really find that fascinating. Well, maybe there's an interesting way of looking at the Irish psyche from now to back then, and seeing how it divided people.
Yeah. But Stefan, in terms of his investors, he didn't guarantee them it was going to work, I assume.
Well, what Stefan did at the time was he created a presentation that explained the whole thing. And I think what the investors wanted to know, like, you know, once the maths had been explained to them, because they're mostly people from a mathematical investing background, they got it. But what they wanted to know was, like, how can I be sure that you filled out all those tickets properly? Imagine, Sean, like, you start off with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. Well, they didn't actually do it like that. But, like, how can you be sure halfway through, oh, my God, which ones have we done and which ones we haven't? So what he did was he did this presentation and he would bring all of the tickets. And people would say, would pick six numbers out of the sky, you know, whatever six numbers they wanted. And he would go and he'd say, OK, I'll go over to this box. And here's the ticket. So he had a system that not only, you know, a mathematical system that worked, but also a system of the logistics. And that gave people a certain amount of confidence that, OK, this is doable.
Yeah. Presumably then he had to send people out or went out himself to take sheaths of the forms, you know, with them.
I think that was one of the trickiest things probably, because, like, imagine, you know, a million forms suddenly went missing. Or no, it wouldn't be a million. It would be 2 million divided by 250,000 forms would suddenly go missing without anyone having played them. But, you know, they're in the shop and they were free to take. But even with that, you know, how careful they would have been, they would have done that very, very carefully at the time.
Yeah, that is extraordinary. Ross, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. That was Ross Whittaker there, director of Beat the Lotto, which hit cinemas tomorrow.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.